Good afternoon. It's a privilege to be here on the first day of arguments. I feel honored. My name is Jeff Parker, number 26205, and I am legal counsel for the North Glen Urban Renewal Authority, which is commonly referred to as NURA. I plan to give you a brief background of the dispute and then delve into the three legal issues that are on appeal. By way of background, NURA was formed in 1992, with original boundaries being an old shopping area known as the North Glen Mall. The 92 Urban Renewal Plan contained a tax increment financing provision, which we also refer to as TIF, implementing a property tax TIF for a 25-year period, commencing in 1992 with a base year of 1991. In 2004, the North Glen City Council added additional property to the NURA boundaries, following provisions in the Urban Renewal Law for a substantial modification to the 92 Urban Renewal Plan. Because market conditions between 2004 and 2009 effectively precluded redevelopment of these 2004 properties, the City Council in 2009 decided to suspend the TIF for the 2004 properties, minus five parcels that we're not dealing with today that were actually redeveloped. The intent of this was to preserve the TIF for use as set forth in the Urban Renewal Law to encourage and fund redevelopment of these blighted properties.
What was the authority for that, for the suspension of the TIF?
That's the issue we're dealing with today, which is there's no specific language in the Urban Renewal Law that says you can suspend the TIF or you can remove property. You have to look to the underlying purpose of the Urban Renewal Law. You have to look to the language of the TIF provision to interpret the Urban Renewal Law to see that it actually does allow for that. The Urban Renewal Law provides that urban renewal boundaries are to be drawn as narrowly as possible, as feasible. It provides that there is a 25-year maximum TIF period. That's the maximum period. So seeing as there's a 25-year maximum period and the boundaries are to be drawn as narrowly as possible, it follows that, for example, if there is an area in a TIF area, certain properties redeveloped, there's no longer the need for a TIF. The bonds may be paid off, the improvement costs were paid off. The Urban Renewal City Council, in this case, the Municipal Council, should have the authority to say, we no longer need a TIF in this. We thought it was going to be 25 years, it actually took 20. We have no need for the TIF revenue, and therefore we should be able to stop the TIF. Take the property out of the TIF area and stop the TIF. So I think it follows that in this case, when there's actually no redevelopment occurring, the underlying purpose of the Urban Renewal Law is to use TIF to redevelop property. It's the fundamental tool of the Urban Renewal Statute. As the Supreme Court recognized in the Arvada case, let's see, I've got Urban Renewal Authority versus Columbine case that we cite in our brief. In some cases, property gets redeveloped, it's no longer blighted, and it can be taken out of Urban Renewal Authority area. And that happened in the Arvada case, and the Supreme Court recognized that was okay. So after the City Council determined in 2009 that we basically need to preserve this 25-year TIF clock, so when we actually do get redevelopment, we'll have a tool to help spur redevelopment. NURA, their Urban Renewal Authority, learned that the Adams County Assessor made two fundamental errors in calculating the TIF. The first error was in how it actually calculated the base value when the 2004 properties were removed from the TIF area. The assessor, or the employee of the assessor's office, used a calculation methodology set forth in what's referred to as the assessor's manual, which is applicable to readjusting base values to account for changes in value due to general reassessments of property in every odd number of years. That provision is not applicable at all to how to calculate a TIF, how to distribute a TIF when property is taken out of the TIF area. The second error the assessor made was in saying that the TIF clock, the 25-year maximum TIF clock, which I just addressed, the 25-year TIF clock for property that's newly added to an urban renewal boundary runs from 1992, from the original date of their renewal plan, not from the date the plan was substantially modified. It's Mary's position that the date the property is added to an urban renewal plan constitutes a modification to that plan. It modifies the TIF provision automatically, and for that new property, it should receive a 25-year TIF period, a full 25-year TIF period. So I'll address the three main legal issues we're dealing with here. The first one, which was relied primarily upon by the trial court, was whether an assessor has discretion in determining how to calculate and distribute TIF revenue, and whether his decision is reviewed for abuse of discretion. The second issue is what should happen to the base value of a TIF area when property comes out of that TIF area. How is that calculation performed? And then the third issue is the 25-year TIF clock issue, which is when should the 25-year TIF clock commence for property added to an existing TIF area. In this case, it was added via substantial modification. I'll address the discretion issue first. NERA doesn't dispute, and there is no dispute, that assessors have discretion when valuing property and when determining the proper valuation method for valuing property. That's well established in the case law. But that's not what this case is about. This case is about how to calculate the TIF when property is removed. It's about construing the Colorado Urban Renewal Law. It's not about property valuation. Although the valuations certainly impact what the TIF is, we're dealing with the actual calculation of the TIF, not valuing property. So the district court erred when it determined, because there was no express language in the urban renewal statute addressing how to calculate the TIF when property is removed, it's up to the assessor's reasonable discretion. The district court relied on the case law dealing with valuation of property and basically held that they were inextricably, I think the word the court used was integrally intertwined. And therefore, because the assessor has discretion in valuing property, you should have discretion in calculating the TIF. And that's just not the case. This is a question of statutory interpretation.
And well, so, counsel, let me stop you right there, because you brought your action against the assessor based on Rule 106A2, is my understanding.
And 57, that's the declaratory judgment.
And declaratory judgment.
Right.
Okay. So let's look at the 106A2 piece. It says you can get relief if the law to perform an act which the law specially enjoins as a duty. And that what I'm trying to determine is what that means. And I have some case law that indicates that specifically a duty, and you can get 106A2 ruling to require the person to do it if it's a ministerial action. And then this ministerial action is if there's a statute or regulation that leaves no room for discretion and specifies the precise action that the official must take. Now, this is the nub of my concern here. As the trial court found and you stipulated to, there is no specific requirement. There's nothing in the statute that says how specifically this is to be done, because the statute doesn't provide for this procedure at all. So how can this be a ministerial action for which you get a 106A2 order?
Right, I think there's two responses to that. The first is we have a debt judgment action under 57, which also covers this issue, which is dealing with interpreting a matter of law.
So how does that help you? Explain to me why that helps you.
Well, the 57 action is we're basically asking the court and the trial court to construe the urban renewal law, tell us how to calculate a TIF when property is removed from a TIF area. You need to interpret the urban renewal law, look to the legislative intent, look to the underlying purpose of the statute, look to other language that's not specifically addressing or doesn't say when property is removed, you must do X. So under Rule 57, you can certainly interpret the urban renewal law and issue a ruling outlining how to calculate TIF when property is taken out. Under Rule 106A2, we are saying that when you look at the entire urban renewal law, and when you look at what you do when you add property, which I can address in a minute, it is the only logical, the only possible thing you can do here is calculate the TIF the way the urban renewal authority is suggesting. And therefore, the only logical reading of the urban renewal law, when you look at all the provisions, not just the actual language that says subtract property, do this, then under 106A2, it's not discretionary. It is an obligation that's required by law to be performed, and the assessor should be ordered to perform it under the urban renewal laws provisions. So we were saying it's not discretionary. And we're saying, when you look at the entire urban renewal law, there is provisions in there that indicate how to calculate a TIF when property is taken out. So when you take property, the urban renewal law is explicit. It's 3125-10798. It's expressly provides what to do when you're adding property to an existing TIF area. It says the value of the property, last certified for assessment, gets added to the base value of the property in the urban renewal area, and it also gets added to the total value of the property in the urban renewal area. So it property comes in 2004, it goes into the base value of the existing property, and it goes into the total value of the existing property. The only logical answer is the reverse has to occur and take it out. When property gets taken out of the renewal area, it comes off the total value. And its contribution to the base value comes off the base value. It's just a mathematical formula here. So if you have one, what we say, simple, to make it really simple, what we're saying is, if you have a statute that says 1 + 1 = 2, it doesn't need to say 2 - 1 = 1. It just follows. And that's why I kind of think you to the 106A2 issue. So moving on to the actual TIF, one more point on the discretion issue. The Colorado Urban Renewal Law expressly provides that urban renewals are not a statewide concern. That's in 3125-102(1). Matters of statewide concern must be applied consistently throughout the state. So if you follow the trial court's decision, if you follow the assessor's argument, every assessor in the state has discretion in how to calculate TIF. And the TIF calculation deals with pretty large dollar figures for local governments all throughout the state of Colorado. And it deals with how tax revenue is distributed among different taxing entities and urban renewal authorities. And this is not the kind of issue that you want to have be leaving to the discretion of each different assessor and have it done differently throughout the state. So moving to the TIF calculation issue, what really happened here is that the assessor's employee took a provision in the assessor's reference library, the assessor's manual, which doesn't apply to how to calculate TIF when property is removed, and we admit there's no express provision in the code saying how to do that, although we think that it follows, as I mentioned, from the express language, and just missed a step. Instead of proportionally adjusting the base to account for general valuation changes during a reassessment year, the step that should have been done before that occurred was the value of the property taken out should have just come out of the total value, which is what happened, but also come out of the base value. Because it makes no sense to have property that's no longer in a TIF area, that's contrary to the provisions of the renewal law, property that's no longer in a TIF area, no longer part of the TIF, to be included as a component of the TIF calculation. So it came off the total value, so you've lost the entire value of the property, but a proportion of that remained in the base value, and then got proportionally adjusted via this calculation. So you end up with a base value in the TIF area after this adjustment that still has a component of property that's no longer in the TIF area. That's contrary to the statute. Secondly, as the Supreme Court in the Arvada case pointed out, when there's no direct provision in the statute addressing what to do, and in this case, the Arvada case dealt with the renewal law, you want to look to the to affect, and I can give you the quote, the beneficial purpose of the statute, beneficial purpose of the legislative major. And in this case, the beneficial purpose of the legislative major, your renewal law, is to allow for the use of the most powerful tool, the most important tool, TIF, to help redevelop property. And if the assessor's method is adopted, you end up with a situation where an urban renewal authority loses the flexibility to use TIF when market conditions change. You also end up with a situation where, as I mentioned earlier, property can't be ever taken out if it's redeveloped. If you have an area that's redeveloped and then needs to be taken out because you no longer need to use TIF for it, you wouldn't do that because it would detrimentally impact everything else that's left in the urban renewal authority area, in the TIF area. it would artificially reduce the increment, and there'd be no reason to remove that property. It's contrary to the fundamental purpose of the statute. And I see my time's running out here. I could talk for an hour about this. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Counselor. And you're right. Your time is up.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Heidi Miller. I'm with the Adams County Attorney's Office, and I'm here representing Adams County Assessor Gil Reyes and the Board of County Commissioners. This case is about tax increment financing, but from the county's perspective, this is not a case where we've attempted to argue that the assessor is the be-all end-all of tax financing, or that he necessarily has the right formula or the right answers to the issue that was presented to him. Unfortunately for the assessor, it was his job to figure out a way to put an evaluation together for the tax increment financing after Northland took action to suspend properties. As Your Honor pointed out, this is not something contemplated by the statute. It's not the assessor's job to tell the Northland Urban Renewal Authority, you can or cannot do that. He's just faced with the situation, and he must therefore respond to it.
But counsel, it's also not contemplated that there would be different ways in which to make this assessment. Isn't that right?
Your Honor, I'm not sure that it's contemplated at all how you would make this assessment, because since the statute doesn't contemplate removing properties, there's really no easy way from reading the statutes to determine how you would change the calculation when properties are removed.
And we have a silent statute here on this point. Would you agree with that?
I agree, Your Honor.
So then we would look to the legislative intent, wouldn't we?
Your Honor, I think that we should only look to the legislative intent if there's ambiguity or confusion in the statutes. In this case, I think it's clear that the statute probably does not allow the suspension in the first place. So should we then go beyond what's written in statute to try and figure out what the legislature might want to do if a city chooses to take that kind of action?
You know, not to get you off the substance of where we're going here, but I'm still trying to figure out just who's on first and who's on which side here. You are representing only the Board of County Commissioners and the assessor, is that right?
That is correct.
Now, on our briefs, we have a whole host of other defendants, whom I assume we will show as no appearance for. But much of what I gleaned from your brief is, or not much, but there's a real criticism of what the city of North Glen did. Are you asserting any sort of cross-claim, or are there any other litigation going on that point?
We are not, Your Honor, and the Board of County Commissioners chose not to do that in the underlying action. They chose not to allege that the actions of North Glen were illegal. Our argument has only been that the assessor was forced to take action and that he did not abuse his discretion. Not whether North Glen's actions were actually lawful. My only point, and I agree, when rereading the briefs, it did seem rather critical, but is that they forced us into this situation. The city's actions forced the assessor into a situation where he and his staff had to go to the statutes, had to go to the Department of Property Taxation and say, how do we do this now? Now that the city has taken an action that we weren't anticipating, how do we deal with it? The Division of Property Taxation told us, yeah, it's not allowed. That was the help we got. So we weren't given any assistance in how to formulate the...
But you didn't cross appeal that it wasn't allowed. So we're all here today with the assumption, for purposes of this case, that it is allowed, and we have to determine whether your assessment was correct.
Or whether the assessor abused his discretion, I guess, is the argument that I would make. He may not have had the right formula. The city has one formula, they suggest. The assessor used one. Based on, they were trying to use some formula out of their assessor manual that was the closest they could find and make calculations based off of that. The Division of Property Taxation, when they were deposed, said they probably would have used even a third formula that would have been even less helpful to the city. And so it's just, there's no clear answer as to how that formula should have been used. And the assessor did his best, and I think that that's what Judge Crabtree, that was his conclusion, is
I'm sorry to interrupt, counsel. Help me to understand, once a declaratory judgment action has been brought, I'm not actually sure how exactly that was framed, but I'm guessing that what it said was, we want a declaratory judgment that the statute means X and that it should have been assessed this way. Is that getting close to what their claim was?
Unfortunately, no. Judge Crabtree was not presented with that simple of a question. What he was presented with was, did the assessor err in his calculation? So Judge Crabtree never got to the question of, what should the formula be? He was only asked, was the assessor wrong? Did the assessor abuse his discretion?
Okay, well, once somebody files a declaratory judgment, depending on how the claim is laid, I mean, I apparently need to go back and look at the declaratory judgment claim, but let's assume for purposes of my question that it says, we want a declaratory judgment that it should have been done differently than the way the assessor did it, and they should have done it our way. Once the issue is posed that way, isn't then the trial court required to construe the statute and figure out what the correct assessment is?
I think, Your Honor, if the question had been presented that way, then yes. If it had been presented as a question of law or a declaratory judgment as to what the law says, then yes, I think Judge Crabtree would have been required.
But it wasn't posed that way?
It was not. Not in my interpretation, Your Honor. I believe it was very clear that all of the questions presented to the trial court started with, did the assessor err?
Well, if the assessor misinterpreted the law, isn't that an error?
Yes, it could be. But I don't think Judge Crabtree had to really get to whether he misinterpreted the law, because Judge Crabtree concluded that the law was not clear. Therefore, the assessor's interpretation was as good as anyone else's, that there is no obvious formula. I know that Nora argues that it's very obvious. 1 + 1 = 2, then 2 - 1 = 1. I've spent a lot of time looking at this. I don't think it's that obvious. It's extremely confusing in my mind. And I think the assessor's office did the best that they could. And really, the only resource they have is this manual produced by the Department of Property Taxation. And there's a formula in there that's used in general reassessment years. That's the formula they used. It's not like he just created something out of thin air. He did what he thought made sense based on what they do in other years and other circumstances.
But back to Judge Terry's point, didn't the trial court effectively construe the statute in response to a request for declaratory judgment? When it's asked, did the assessor commit error, it seems to me it has to construe what the statute requires.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding of Judge Crabtree's rationale was the statute is not clear, therefore the assessor couldn't have been wrong.
Okay.
And again, you know, the case presented at the lower court was, did the assessor err? And so the county and the assessor's response to that was, no, it was not error. It was not arbitrary and capricious. There was a rationale, a method behind what was done, and there's no clear statutory authority that says that was wrong.
Can you give me some authority for the arbitrary and capricious standard that you just applied?
Can Your Honor, it's cited in Judge Crabtree's order.
If it is, then I'll find it.
He does talk about that arbitrary and capricious standard. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't have that right off the top of my head.
All right.
And as to your point, Your Honor, regarding the 106A2, I'm in complete alignment with your thoughts there. I think that clearly the mandamus relief contemplated by 106A2 is when a government official is not doing their job. Here, the question is not whether the assessor did his job, it's whether the assessor did his job in the way that the city of North Platte or Nora wanted him to do it. And the 106A2 relief, as you stated, is ministerial in nature. It's do A or not do A, not how should you do it, and let me give you the details on how that should be done. So I think Judge Crabtree was completely correct in his analysis that 106A2 did not apply in this situation.
Counsel, what was the question framed below, did you say?
It was, I can read them to you exactly, but did the assessor err?
And that's it?
There were three questions presented. The first claim for relief was that the authority was entitled to declaratory judgment that the assessor erred in his calculation of incremental tax revenue payable to the authority after the TIF was suspended, and this is in the complaint, paragraph 64. The third claim for relief, that the authority argued that it was entitled to a declaratory judgment that the assessor erred in calculating the incremental tax revenue for the second properties with less than a 25-year duration. And then the fifth claim for relief was that the authority argued it was entitled to declaratory judgment that the assessor erred in calculating the tax incremental revenue for the third property with less than a 25-year duration. And I believe that that fifth one is actually kind of, is not a part of this appeal.
But it boils down to, did the assessor err? And the trial court concluded it did not. It did not abuse its discretion.
Right.
For purposes of this discussion, if we were to disagree with that ruling on that issue, do we then send it back for the trial court to determine what the appropriate calculation would be, or would that be something appropriate for this court to do?
Your Honor, I believe that since the trial court did not reach that issue, it would be appropriate to send it back to the trial court to make that determination. I mean, I think in essence, you would be telling the trial court that he didn't do his job, didn't finish the analysis. But obviously, you know, from the assessor's point of view, we're willing to follow any order from any court as to how this should be done. Again, we're really not trying to say that we necessarily have the right answer. It's just that we did the best we could. And there was not error on the part of the assessor's office. Certainly going forward, we would like to have as much instruction from either this court or the legislature as to how this should be handled. This is the only situation we've been faced with, but certainly it could come up again where other authorities attempt to suspend properties. It could come up in other jurisdictions as well.
There was discussion in the briefs about this, the issue of whether we need statewide unity here, and I can't remember which brief alluded to the fact that similar issues have been presented in other areas, or is that?
Nora did state that in their brief. I asked the assessor about that. He was under the impression that those issues were different, but you know, we didn't do a comprehensive analysis of what's going on in other jurisdictions. That's really all I have to say. If there's any questions or anything else, I can answer for you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you both for your arguments. The case will stand submitted. An opinion will issue in due course.